Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
From the deer stand to the bass boat and everywhere in between, Hunter's Hollow has all you need. Firearms, ammo, bows, fishing rods, and more. The latest in gear and accessories, plus Thunder Hollow Indoor Gun Range. Hunter's Hollow, Highway 6 West, between Oxford and Batesville. Online, huntershollow.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in on this Tuesday night to the podcast. My name is Michael Borky. Always appreciate you being here. And tonight we're talking simply about Pete Golding. Got behind the podium for the first time here. Let me adjust this camera, actually. Oh, wrong way. Whoop, wrong way again. There we go. That's a little bit better, right? I'm in the center, actually. Pete Golding got behind the podium for the first time in a long time. To be honest, it has been since the college football playoff, and there was a lot to get to with this as well, because as you know, since the college football playoff ended, they signed a portal class, they did all the player retention, all of that stuff happened, and then the Dabo thing, and then spring practice has started as well. So there just is a lot to address for Pete Golding. I've got, let me count them for you, 3, 6, 7, 8 different audio cuts, and a lot of them are long, too. He gives pretty detailed and thoughtful answers in these press conference settings. It was 27 minutes long today, which is very atypical for the Ole Miss coach anyway. Not saying that's good or bad or better or worse or whatever, but it is a lot longer, a lot more detailed. You learn more in press conferences from Pete Golding than the previous coach, which, again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong or whatever, but there's a lot more substance here for sure. So I've got these cuts for you. That's going to be the show tonight. I'm so glad you're here. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just search Rebel Report and subscribe and leave a rating and a review also right here on YouTube as well. Like, comment, also hit the notification bell so you know when we go live or if I post something new. And this edition of the show is presented by Logan Smith Shelter Insurance, anywhere in Mississippi. If you need auto, home, life, or business insurance, auto, home, life, or insurance for your business, he will take care of you anywhere in this state. Give him a call, 601-823-3500. 601-823-3500. Logan Smith Shelter Insurance has award-winning services. He will take care of you. And don't forget to tell him that it was me that sent you to him. Check him out. So this is the thing that you guys may not agree with, this part of it. This is the thing that to me was, I was the most interested in going into Pete Golding's media today, was if he had a comment or if he would comment on what Dabo Swinney said slash did back in, I guess it was late January, right before the winter storm hit in Oxford, the whole Luke Farelli tampering situation. Pete Golding was asked about it. This is his shortest response of the day, but there is a lot here. So here is what Pete Golding had to say about the Luke Farelli tampering situation.
Vince, how Luke Farelli got here, just wanted to give you a chance to, I mean, did it all go down like he said, and what was your kind of reaction to being called out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think there's two sides to every story, right? And so I'm not going to sit up here and use the podium as a grandstand and all that, right? I mean, that's why there is enforcement. That's why we have a compliance office, right, that they do all that. So, you know, the bottom line, the recruitment of Luke, he came on an official visit, right, prior to the Fiesta Bowl. And I told him, hey, I want you to be our green dot mic, but right now we got a green dot mic, right? And that spot's not going to be available until we don't have, you know, until we have one available. And so I want you. He wants to be here. I said, but right now there ain't a spot available. So if that spot becomes available, it's yours, right? So it's a kid that wanted to be here, that we wanted to be here, that at the end of it came open, and he's here, and we're happy to have him.
All right, so a couple of things of note on there. And this is very – what I'm about to say is very easy for me to say because I wasn't there. And it's a lot easier to be on the sidelines and criticize when you're not actually there. As I tell you guys all the time, the only downside to doing my job where I do it and who I do it for, the only downside to it is that I am based in Jackson and not in Oxford. And so going to press conferences with a 3-hour radio show to do in the afternoon, it's a difficult thing to do. It's hard to make that happen often, and it's just unfortunate. I wish there would have been a follow-up in there. There's a lot more that I would like to know, but two things there. One, kind of took a shot at Dabo with the grandstanding behind a podium. That was a clear direct shot at Dabo. But also, there's the back half of that talking about wanted you to be the green dot linebacker. There already was one on roster. We're not going to give that spot to somebody else unless that spot comes available. And they upgraded at that position. So the Lane Kiffin sabotage attempt to take as many Ole Miss players at the very end as possible and having to settle for only four of them allowed Ole Miss to upgrade at that position. Pete Golding was willing to stay loyal to a guy that was already on the team, in his own words. And once that situation unfolded, they ended up upgrading at that position at linebacker. So an interesting little twist in that saga. So again, not much there. I wish there would have been a follow-up asked, but two sides to every story, compliance, etc. It's about all you're going to get from a situation like that anyway. And I don't think there is much fear of anything significant happening based on that response and that tone. Maybe I'm misreading that. It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot to be worried about there. Or it doesn't sound like they are particularly worried right now. I have not spoken to anybody or talked to anybody that has given me any indication that they expect something like truly significant to happen as a result of this. Maybe that's not the right feeling, but I haven't heard from anybody that says that something actually bad is about to happen. All right. So that is the first thing. Second thing about his quarterback. He actually, this clip starts, or I started it. He was asked about like the QB2 battle. And I understand that Trinidad was QB2 last year and became the guy. I still am not as interested in who's going to be the backup quarterback. That doesn't move me right now. And I mean, if we're being honest, if it's not Deuce Knight, then I think something went wrong. But in that answer, he started talking and gave you a good look into the type of leader Trinidad is. And then he's asked a follow-up question about him and then expanded there. So here's some thoughts from Golding on his quarterback.
Nice to have a guy that has been in the system come back. Obviously, from a knowledge standpoint being one thing, but such a good dude, right? And just showing you how to do it, right? And how to prepare for a meeting and how to pay attention in a meeting and how to practice. And so I think that development phase, not only for Maddox, but for Deuce as well, I think is really important in that room. And then to add a veteran like Walker Howard, right, that had been here, that had been in the system, that has transferred, that went through an injury, just the maturity of that. He loves Oxford. He loves Ole Miss. He's really, really smart, so he helps those guys as well. So really like the balance in there, right, from an athletic standpoint and then obviously from an experience standpoint, but more importantly, the maturity of how to do it, how to lead, and how to be a leader for this team.
Obviously an eventful offseason for Trinidad. Just how have you seen him handle everything that was kind of thrown his way over the last few months?
Yeah, I think he's done an unbelievable job just focusing on what he could control, you know, and obviously with the case from the very beginning, a lot of people in that camp felt really good, you know, obviously about him being able to play 4 years. So there was never a major concern, but I think obviously everything has uncertainty, right? And he still is a kid, right? So I think, you know, the kind of the longer that it went, start becoming a little uneasy, and I'm not going to speak for him. It's like, all right, I got this NFL looming over me, right? Do I need to start preparing for that? Am I here with the guys, right, trying to be the starting quarterback and be the leader that we need? So his maturity is off the chart, you know, and the ability to focus and be where his feet are. So I thought he handled it like a pro. There was never any issues. You know, throughout it, we were going to balance it and say, hey, we got to prepare for both, right? Because we really don't know. We feel good about it. But obviously still go out there and develop and work with your quarterback coach and do all those things to where, you know, if it's not good news like we think, then you can go that route. But it has been awesome. He's got a really good family around him, a really good camp. So it was pretty easy, to be honest with you.
As you can hear, a lot of respect from the head coach to his quarterback. That there's a lot to unpack there. And the most interesting thing to me about Trinidad this offseason, he started as many games as he did last year, took them to the college football playoff, won a couple of playoff games, but he did not have a full offseason as the guy. That wasn't his team, and it really didn't become his team, I don't think, until as the season was going on, because as you know, they were still doing the whole when Austin is healthy, he's the starter thing for weeks, right? It never became his thing on its own as early maybe as it should have, and he didn't have a full offseason. Remember, he joined the team late anyway, but now he has a full offseason. Now it's his team. It's his program. He can take ownership of it, and I can't help but wonder how valuable that's going to be for him in preparation for this season. You already know what his ceiling is. It's incredibly high, but that's what he did all that last year without having a real offseason as being the starter. And hearing the way his coach talks about him, knowing that that is still out there for him, that there's still some development that can and needs to be done, there's a lot to like about Trinidad, obviously, but hearing the way his coach talks about him and understanding how much more time he's got to get ready, and knowing what his process is and how he approaches things and stuff like that, it's impressive. And this offseason's huge for him, obviously, and just glowing praise all around about the quarterback there. Speaking of the backfield anyway, the guy next to him, Kiwan Lacy, but the room is pretty full now with what they did in the transfer portal. Here's Pete Golding being asked and answering about running backs.
Pete, you kind of restocked the running back room behind Kiwan. What kind of led into that, you know, really getting more bodies back there? Did it have to do with his injury too and just, you know, the holding him up over a 16-game schedule? What do you like about that room and those players and getting that depth and add in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing in that room is that they're different skill sets, you know, and I think you have to have the ability to run the football in this league, I think, to win the ones that you really need to win. And obviously the durability of that position, right, and the things that we ask them to do. But, you know, I was used to being around a running back room that, you know, they had a guy that didn't even start a game his whole career and went in the first round, right? There was different packages based on skill sets, right, and a lot of things that you could do that provide a lot of issues from a defensive standpoint, right, based on how they do. Again, they could catch it out of the backfield, a power runner, a scat back. So I thought it was important to have balance in there with different skill sets as well as having experience. And I think that's the big thing coming into this league. You're going to play in big games week in and week out, right? You better, you know, the moment better not be too big. And so obviously we love the opportunity of having guys that had experience, you know, playing winning football at that position, regardless of the level. And that back, I mean, you know, we're not looking for him to carry it 35, 40 times. He's not going to make it, you know? And so we want him to be explosive. We want to put him in a good position. But when he comes out, we don't want them to know we're throwing the ball, right? So we want to have the ability to still run the football effectively, right, regardless whether he's in the game or not. So I thought it was really important. And then obviously bringing in Frank at that position, you know, that's had the ability to develop a lot of running backs over the years in a lot of different places, I thought, you know, really helped as well.
Yeah, that's something that I have talked about a good bit over the years, especially last year, is that they need to be more protective, or needed to be more protective, of running backs. They got away with it this past season, but they did not get away with it at all in 2024. Henry Parrish, they treated a small Henry Parrish like he was Derrick Henry. He was overused, and it ultimately got him hurt in the game in which they were comfortably winning. And without Henry Parrish, it kind of destroyed that season. They need to be more efficient with how they use Kiwon Lacy. He does not need to be getting carries in the fourth quarter of the non-conference games in which they're winning by four scores. It never made any sense the way that, not the way that they used him necessarily, but how overused he was. And so now it sounds like they've got some versatility in the backfield to not only maybe give him some breaks in the meaningful games, but also feel comfortable not giving Kiwon Lacy fourth quarter carries in the non-conference game when you're up by multiple scores. That is something that always made me scratch my head, and now it sounds like they have addressed that. We'll see, but they need to spread the ball around a little bit in the running back room and be more efficient with how they use Kiwon, because as Golding said, he's not going to make it if they give him 30 carries a game. It's just not going to work like that. So there you go. Running backs to wide receivers. There's a lot of new faces in that room, or in the context of Caleb Cunningham, a guy that hasn't played much but has a ton of potential. Here's what the head coach said about that position.
Lee hurts, but what are your thoughts on this year's new receiving core?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, those guys did an unbelievable job, were super explosive. Strib was one of my favorite guys, just work ethic-wise and how he was wired, and he's a pro. And then Wallace was super explosive. So we wanted to go out, number one, and make sure that we're still getting guys that could stretch the field vertically. I think it's a big piece to that offense, especially I know from a coordinating standpoint, you know, when you have an elite quarterback back that's really athletic, right, when you have an All-American running back, that there's going to be a lot of attention on those two from a run game. If you still have the ability to stretch the field vertically on the outside, it presents a lot of issues, right, and you're very hesitant, you know, based on matchups, to isolate guys and put them one-on-one. So I think, you know, Gil, I think, has got the top-end speed you want. Obviously, he's stretched the field vertically where he's been. He's got experience. You know, I think Jonte, I think Cook, you know, as a kid, obviously, that we recruited when I was at Alabama, extremely talented, very elusive. I think he allows you to do some different things from an offensive standpoint that create issues in the pass and the run game. And then between Fields and some of the other guys, I just think, you know, there can be some breakout guys that y'all aren't saying their name right now just based on how they're wired. And they're really tough and they're really competitive. And LD's done a great job with that group. And JDB's done a really nice job. So, Horatio and all that group, like, they've got plenty of talent. You know, we got to do a good job coaching them and putting them in a good position. But, you know, that's a lot that you're replacing. I get it. But, you know, that's the one thing about this offense has done on a consistent basis, you know, regardless who's calling it, is, you know, when you get really good players, it's a system, you know, that's had success. And nobody knew who Strib was at this point last year, and Wallace and all those guys. I mean, those guys are going to have to come in and make an impact, and that's what.
Yeah, and he says nobody knew who Wallace was. Oh, they did, because remember, Trey Wallace was blamed for Penn State's struggles offensively. Not the quarterback, it was the receivers, remember, that were blamed for that. And then we all saw what happened after. Kidding aside, Daryl Gill being mentioned first is, I think, is a good thing, because that is somebody that has the size, the physical tools, the experience. When you signed him and you had to fight off Ohio State to get him, that is somebody that you expect, maybe not need, but expect to step in and kind of fill that role that Stribling or Wallace had. And it sounds like he's going to do just that. But it's a talented group. You mentioned Horatio Fields being somebody that, you know, they got really late in the process. And, you know, that's a really positive thing, considering his talent ceiling. I mean, there's a lot there at wide receiver for them to be a really solid group. Not much of it is proven at Ole Miss. Only Deuce Alexander is the one that is proven at Ole Miss. But the talent ceiling in that room is incredibly high, and I do expect them to do a little bit more rotating at that position. Again, very similar to running back. I expect them to do a little bit more rotating at that position than they did last year as well. The depth will allow them to do that, but I do think you're going to see more than what you've seen in the past. Before we get to the other four cuts, one of them, by the way, over 4 minutes long. I hate to tell you, but it's really good. But the podcast is brought to you in part by Priority One Bank. They make you their priority every single day with their online banking platform. 16 locations in Mississippi, local loan servicing and decision making. Tell them I sent you. Bank with me at Priority One Bank. I promise it is in the name for a reason, and they will take care of you. Also, Advantage Business Systems, absms.com, for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. All right. Defensive line now. The other side of the ball, he has a couple of things in here and these next two cuts that should perk your ears up a little bit. But here's the first one on the defensive line.
See, I think it's a group that's got a lot of experience coming back. So, you know, having Will Echols come back, who I think is a really elite player, and Cam Franklin has continued to develop and really showing, you know, what we thought he was going to be honest with you, on a consistent basis. And, you know, still having Jamarius Brown, who's going to, you know, third year in the systems, played a lot of football. You know, I think Andrew Maddox has the ability to be a really good player. You know, a guy last year that really learned the system and knows the expectations, seen it done the right way. You know, obviously Perkins, you know, from an edge standpoint, has played, you know, start 3 year starter for us, understands what we're asking to do. And then, you know, I think the additions of that, like, I felt like we lacked internal depth, right, late in the year, and that was an issue, especially late in the game versus Miami. And so I wanted to go get two more big guys, you know, inside that have, you know, the mass and the girth that you need but have experience. And so, you know, I think we did that. And it's a guy, obviously, you know, one of them started for me as a true freshman at Bama. There's some familiarity within the system. He's a Mississippi kid on top of it. And then I think, you know, you had to go get some elite edge guys, in my opinion, to replace some of the production that left. So I think Blake Purchase has been in a similar system with Dan at Oregon. I think he's a really good football player. I think Macanado from Novato, I think, has got an elite skill set, 6'5", can corner. I think he's in a really elite pass rusher, still heavy-handed. And I think some of these freshmen, in my opinion, are as good of a class defensively that I've been around in a long time. One being Landon Barnes, you know, who's a guy up front. I think he's very, very unique. Hold, who I think he reminds me of, right? It's a little too early for that, but I think he has a unique skill set, wired the right way. And then, you know, there's two other freshmen in that class that I think are going to be really good players that I'm not ready to say their name yet, but I really like that group. Coach Joyner obviously does a really good job with those guys. And I think it's really important, you know, to us, we talk about stability in the scheme, right? And those guys have been in this system for 3 years, some of them. And so it's really good when you get young freshmen to come in there, right? They help coach them, right? And they know what the culture is and the expectations and all those type of things. So it's really cool to see those older guys that are going into that junior year to take these freshman guys and kind of take them under their wing, right, and help develop them and help coach them and all that. So Carmelo's, I think, had a chance to be a really good player. Jaden Curtis, I think, you know, in-state kid that we like where he's at. He's been really effective up to this point. So I think we got a really quality depth there, you know, in the two portal guys. You know, I think Jaheim can be as good as he wants to be. And I think, you know, that was the one thing in the recruiting is like, hey, brother, it's time to make the right decisions, right? This is your last opportunity. You're coming home, and this is what we're going to expect from you. So we're expecting them to do some good things.
Pete, what have you
That last part, hold that thought on that last part, because I've got that 4 minute cut that's really going to make you think about that conversation he's referencing with Jaheim Otis. But it's something that we talked about after the game against Miami, the difference between being in a playoff semifinal team and winning the national championship was a couple of spots. The defensive secondary, they needed another safety or two, and they didn't have playable depth on the defensive line. They have allocated the funds better to have more balance on the roster to allow them to have playable depth on the defensive line. And I think that they have done a good job of addressing the secondary as well. We'll have to see there. But you need that to be true, right? You need to – what he's saying has got to be accurate. Playable depth on the defensive line has got to be a thing that they have. And if they don't have it, then their ceiling is lower. But if they do, look out. All right, this next one, he says something that will stand out to you. Let's see if you catch it the way I did.
To the portal, how much did that change going from defensive coordinator to head coach?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think you don't look at it any differently. You're just looking at, you know, every phase now. But I think, number one, you're looking, all right, what holes do we have that we can't replace with our current roster that we need to bring in from an experience standpoint? And then, obviously, all right, what guys do we have that we don't have quality depth behind that we feel like could come in and really push, right, and be a rotational piece? So I think a lot goes into it. But most importantly, I think, you know, the guys that are tough, competitive, and love football. And I think that's the biggest difference, in my opinion, is the way we recruit. Like, we don't sugarcoat things. Like, we know Oxford ain't perfect, Ole Miss ain't perfect, and I damn sure ain't perfect. All right, and we're not trying to hide anything, and we tell them exactly how it's going to be. And we're here to develop you as a player and a man, and this group is just like those guys that were like there last year. Right? They're tough, competitive, and they love football, and they want to get coached. And so I think the talent aspect of it's one thing. I think it's pretty easy to watch on tape and see size, speed, and AA and all those. But how's the fit? You know, does he love football, or does he love what football can do for him? Those are two completely different things. So I think with the experience that we brought in, but more importantly, they got high football IQs. They've been coached. They've been in good systems. They've played at a high level, and they want to be here. And I think it's different when you're coming off a season like we had, and there's already a core of guys, you know, in that locker room that understands the expectations, right, and what the culture has been created up to that point, right, and they can continue to lead and help them. So I'm excited about them. Like I said, I think it's the most depth across the board that I feel like we've had since I've been here, as far as from a talent standpoint that I think can play winning football. Obviously, there's still a lot of time from now until, you know, when that needs to be ready to roll. But it is a skill set that we all identified based on the position of need. Obviously, you're not bringing in transfer guys with the idea to be a four-core guy, right? You want them to come in and push and compete and have starter ability, at least rotational ability. What I think it did allow us to do is get better on special teams, because we have a lot more body types with size, speed at the DB, linebacker, and running back position, and receiver that can, you know, play four core special teams, because those are going to matter, especially late. And so I think it's going to allow us to look at guys' skill sets based on what they can do instead of what they can't do, and create packages, you know, in all three phases to be able to get them on the grass. Because when you bring in guys that have real ability, right, then it's your responsibility to create packages for them to have roles. One, to increase value for themselves, but, you know, two, to increase value for us. And so I think the rotation of players is going to be extremely important, right, to be able to make sure that we're identifying everybody's skill set that could play winning football.
The most depth that they've had since he's been there. That's a big loaded statement there. And if he's right, if he's not sugarcoating, which he didn't strike me as a sugarcoater, but if he's not sugarcoating, that is a obviously a good thing. Breaking news, more at 11. It's good to have depth, but I mean, on paper, considering the retention and what they added in the portal, and then also what they've been able to do in high school recruiting, I can see why he gets there. And then the thing that we don't talk about enough is special teams. We do it with the kicker, right? But it's not just about the kicker. It's how effective can you be on special teams in the return game and things like that. Ole Miss has not had an effective return game in how long? Well, how do you help that? It's not just get a good kick returner. It's have good players all over the field that can help you be better there. So interesting stuff. Two more. One of them super long. Sorry about that, but it's his best quote of the day. This one, though, is pretty funny. He was asked, you know, what's the difference? You know, what's it like being a head coach versus, you know, what it was being a defensive coordinator? He gives a pretty funny. And then there's an anecdote in here that I want to get to as well. But good answer here.
It's super different. Like, when you try to go out to eat and do like normal shit that you think is normal, that obviously is not normal. And just, it's amazing to me how the world works when one title can change and a pitcher goes to 100,000. So, but other than that, you know, trying to get on a really good routine, you know, I think, you know, for me, and I'd mentioned this before, like delegating things, always hasn't been my strong suit on some things. When you're D2 and 1AA and you don't have a lot of guys to delegate to, like, you just do it and you kind of get used to that. So the delegation of things, but really for me, getting on a really good routine, right, from a recruiting standpoint, right, still calling the defense while still, you know, obviously from a personnel standpoint, right, being around the offensive guys and all that, and then, you know, getting other programs in place to develop young men still, right, that we needed in place from a program standpoint. So, to be honest with you, it's been really fun, but I'm continuing to tweak the schedule daily. Still ain't mastered that one yet, but we're trying to figure it out.
All right, that last part. Still tweaking how they do things, the willingness and ability to immediately adapt. It's, oh, actually, you know what? I didn't like this. Let's do it this way. This and evolving, because there are guys. There was one in the state of Mississippi that were in a similar position to Pete Golding, that it was, this is my way, this way, like hard and unwilling to be flexible or listen to people close to them, or that doesn't sound like a guy that is static in what he thinks and expects, and has decided that this is how it's going to be and is unwilling to change and adapt. And you hope a lot of Saban rubbed off on him there, because I know he retired at the end, and I have feelings about things that he has said in his retirement in particular, but you cannot take away from the fact that Nick Saban adapted to the changes in the sport up until the very end, right? But and hired really smart people and let them do their jobs under the standard in which he set. That last little part of, you know, I'm still, you know, tweaking things, because I like different things in different ways better as we learn. I think it's a good thing. A coach that's willing to adapt is a good thing. All right, here is the last thing. It's really long, but this is his best answer. Describing how it was a question about Caleb Cunningham, and it turned into recruiting honestly with high school players, talking about their role, et cetera. It's very good. A lot of depth of thought here.
And like, I don't put an expectation recruiting a freshman that he's going to play as a freshman. We're going to create every opportunity for him, right? And we're going to try to develop him and do all those things, and you know, that prepares him to be able to play. But like, we didn't build the program to have to bank on an 18-year-old freshman to have to play winning football in the SEC. Like, that's hard to do, you know. Now, we've had three freshman All-American in the last 3 years on defense, and I've started freshmen in the SEC, but they've been top 10 draft picks. Like, that's not normal, you know. So our expectation for them is to come in and be a really good dude and be a really good teammate, right, and learn the system and be very, very coachable, and then be ready for your opportunity. Come in and prepare every day, and we're going to invest in you. We're going to go all in with you, but, you know, we're not going to set this expectation that you're starting game one or you even have to play your freshman year, right, as a failure or a success. But, you know, I think we have a lot of guys in that class that have real ability, that have bought in, and I think several of them will make an impact. And what phase that is, I'm not ready to say that, but a lot of them have real ability that we're really excited about.
Along those lines, Pete, just philosophically, if in your ideal world, how would your roster be balanced in terms of guys that you brought in out of high school versus portal?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think when you have stability in the system, and you keep on hearing me that, but, like, if you go do your research, right, like, there's got to be stability in order for there to be development, right? Like, you got to come in, you got to learn the system. After you learn the system, then you focus on the technical aspect. And then at some point, you got to coach the opposite side of the ball, right, of anticipation of what's coming and all those type of things. So, you know, there's a lot of research out there, and there's not a lot of stability in systems anymore. So when you have that, you would like to do that from the ground up. Right, you want to recruit high school guys so they get in here and learn it that freshman year and get bigger, stronger, and faster and learn your system. And now they're plug and play for the next year. And so now you've given yourself a year and a half to prepare that guy instead of having to always go portal. And now you got 6 months, right, to really develop them, let them learn your system and do all those things. But I think it's so unique because you don't know, right? And that's what I always tell them from recruiting. I'd much rather guys not come than come and leave. And so that's why we're brutally honest about everything up front, because then they've got to start all over, but then we get no return on our investment. All right? Does that make sense? And so I think it's just really important for us, and that's why I hired JDB, because you've already had a locker room, right, that had been recruited to play in that system. Right? And I wanted those freshmen to become sophomores, and I wanted those sophomores to become juniors. And so obviously we're going to take, you know, take a five-hour radius. right? And we're going to try to do our best job to keep those guys at home if they want to be here and they have the ability to play winning football in the SEC. Obviously, we'll expand that as large as we need to if they're an impact player. I do think Ole Miss is a national brand now. You've had success on both sides of the ball. You're a top three team in the country based off of last year, so you have the ability to spread that net. But I think from a business standpoint, you got to be really smart, right? That it's hard to come in here as an 18-year-old freshman and really play, so you got to know their mindset as well. And so some of those guys that you need to have to make an impact right now based on who's in the room, then obviously that's a portal concept. And so I think it's a really good blend. But I think, you know, when you recruit the right way and you have stability within the scheme, I think that allows you to sign more high school players than not. If it's constant turnover and you got to teach everybody, right, and there's no carryover, you might as well get the older, more experienced guy that you know, right, and fill those holes. So I think it's a really good balance. But that, you know, that was something even like our D-line last year, we didn't have to go out in the portal a lot, right, because we had took those four the year before, right, that didn't play a snap, and now they're ready to go and they're all starters. And so, obviously, ideally, that's the way we want to do it, all right? But then you have guys leave, right? Some guys don't pan out, right? Evaluations aren't a perfect science. And then, obviously, we need an older guy with experience to come in and play winning football. So I think that'll change year in and year out. I don't think that's something that's on paper. You know, here's this number and that number. I think it's based on, all right, who's returning? Did we have injuries, right? Where's the development of the position? Are they are who we thought they are? And so I think that's a year-to-year process.
A lot there. That was a very detailed response and a description of their philosophy. But the 5-hour radius thing is something that we've talked about a lot on here in this era. That yes, myself included, people are cynical about recruiting and how it doesn't matter anymore and things like that. But when you look at the best programs in the country, they're not flipping a roster every year. And ever since Golden got to Ole Miss, the high school recruiting has changed a lot. As he mentioned on the defensive line, the guys that are from closer appear to be more likely to stay through, as he mentioned, not playing. As I've said to you guys before, if Caleb Cunningham was a 5-star from Tampa, he'd be gone by now, I think. But because this is where he's from, they are more willing, guys like him. Look at the defensive line room. Forget the starters for a second. Look at some of the backups and the third stringers on the defensive line. Those are guys that are staying, and those are guys that are nearby, from nearby. And as he said, it's not an exact science, but there is an efficiency and an intellect to the concept of recruiting local beyond just because you think those are the guys that you can get initially. Those are likely the guys that are willing to stick through some early adversity in their career because they are emotionally connected here. And then, of course, the other side of it, as he talks about, it's, you know, what's the point of trying to sell playing time to a player you know is not going to play right away just for them to leave because you told them that they were going to play right away? So there's a lot there and a lot to unpack in that answer, but really intentional in the response and something that, you know, he didn't BS through. I think you're seeing the tangible results of that philosophy on the field and roster building, and I think that's only going to grow moving forward. So really, really good stuff from Pete there. Hate to tell you guys, I'm not going to stick around. I can't stick around for comments. I wish I could. I cannot. But that was a lot of press conference audio, and I've got to run. So I appreciate you guys being here as always. I promise we'll do all the comments on Thursday. We will be live on Thursday after the game. Whenever the game ends, we will go live and react to whatever happens in Gainesville together. So I'll see you guys on Thursday. I really appreciate you being here. Don't forget to like and subscribe and all that good stuff. And I'll talk to you on Thursday night after the game. See you then.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.